In the brutal chessboard of Kingston's 1980s political warfare, the pieces weren't politicians. They were enforcers, and few were more feared than a man known only as Dido. He wasn't just another gunman from Arnett Gardens. He was the PNP's secret weapon, Kingston's underground answer to Jim Brown. While Brown ruled Tivoli with U.S. connections and cocaine pipelines, Dido built a parallel empire in jungle, where politics, powder, and punishment became one and the same. He coordinated hits on rival dons, moved cocaine through the underbelly of South Kingston, and turned his turf into a fortress. But his war wasn't just about drugs. It was a blood-soaked campaign of revenge, votes, and power, where enemies disappeared and elections were decided not at the ballot box, but by bullets. And when Dido died, the illusion of control in Kingston collapsed. Gangs splintered, violence surged, and the line between politics and organized crime vanished for good. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1, Rise of Dido. The early years, where Dido came from, how jungle became a war zone, his rise through the ranks, and his political utility. Kingston, 1978. The air was thick with suspicion and smoke. PNP and JLP strongholds had turned into mini-republics, where party colors determined who lived and who got executed in broad daylight. In the heart of it all sat Arnett Gardens, better known by its street name, Jungle. And in the shadows of its zinc roof lanes, a boy named Dido was learning how power moved. He was wiry, quiet, calculating. Not the kind of youth who made noise in a dance hall, but people noticed him because he never blinked, especially when violence broke out. By 17, Dido had a nickname, a reputation, and a cause. Defend Jungle from the Dogs in Tivoli, a reference to the JLP-affiliated zone ruled by the legendary enforcer Jim Brown. The 1980 election was Dido's true baptism. That year, over 800 Jamaicans were murdered in politically charged killings. Jungle was no exception. The neighborhood became a front line, and Dido was no longer a corner youth. He was a soldier. The making of a political enforcer. To understand Dido is to understand what garrison politics really means. The People's National Party, PNP, and the Jamaica Labour Party, JLP, had turned Kingston's poorest communities into vote-delivering machines, protected and enforced by armed men. Dido wasn't just defending his block. He was defending a political territory, and the PNP noticed. Rumors swirled that he began receiving shipments, guns, cash, even encrypted instructions from high-level contacts. Whether they were MPs or party operatives, no one knows. What's clear is this. Dido began operating like a man with invisible protection. The cocaine connection. By 1983, the street wars had evolved. The U.S. was pushing cocaine into Miami, and Jamaica became a key transshipment point. While Jim Brown and the Shower Posse were locking down Tivoli's access to the ports, Dido was making moves of his own. He seized control of a critical cocaine corridor that snaked through South Kingston, using back roads, couriers, and fishing vessels. But he wasn't flashy. His lieutenants handled the transactions, and Dido stayed close to the community. He paid rent for struggling families. He threw block parties. He buried young men whose deaths he had likely orchestrated. It was a performance, part Robin Hood, part warlord, retaliation, and strategy. What set Dido apart wasn't just violence, it was timing. When Tivoli launched raids into Rima or Jungle, Dido responded with precision. Houses linked to JLP supporters would mysteriously burn down at night. Men would vanish. No graffiti. No claims of responsibility. Just silence and fear. By 1986, Dido was no longer just a local don. He was a strategic asset to the PNP's unofficial security apparatus. You don't understand, one former resident said in a 1999 interview. He wasn't a man. He was a boundary. The kill list, a leaked document in 1987, revealed the names of suspected political enforcers targeted by rival gangs. Dido's name was not on it. Why? Because no one could get close. He operated through intermediaries. His lieutenants spoke for him. His safe houses rotated weekly, and he refused to use the same car 2 days in a row. According to police reports, Dido was the most elusive gang figure operating in Kingston in 1987. But being untouchable had a price. Cracks in the empire. The problem with invisible power is that it breeds paranoia. Dido became increasingly suspicious of his own men. He had his inner circle rotated every month. He once killed a young soldier because he smiled too long during a private briefing. Loyalty wasn't enough. He demanded silence, obedience, and distance. This isolation led to internal fractures. Two of his lieutenants defected to Tivoli in 1988. Days later, both were found dead in a shallow grave in Mountain View. The message was clear. There is no retirement from jungle, the police files. Despite multiple warrants, Dido was never successfully prosecuted. Each time an operation was launched, someone tipped him off. Some claim he had moles inside Mobile Reserve. Others whisper his PNP sponsors intervened. Whatever the case, Dido became a ghost in plain sight. By 1989, the name Dido was both a threat and a myth. Parents used it to scare disobedient children. Tivoli gunmen whispered it in anger, and police officers, those who weren't on the take, feared triggering a citywide explosion if they moved too fast. The Jungle Code. Dido's rules were brutal but clear. No rape, no robbery inside jungle, no betrayal ever. He punished violators publicly. One thief was forced to dig his own grave while neighbors watched. A suspected informant was stripped, tied to a lamppost, and executed with a warning sign taped to his chest, Tivoli Rat. It wasn't just fear, it was theater. The rumors of rogue intelligence. One theory, rarely spoken aloud, is that Dido was more than an enforcer, that he was trained, perhaps even guided, by rogue intelligence figures during the Cold War. The 1980s were a peak time for CIA activity in the Caribbean, and Jamaica was on their radar. Did Dido receive counterinsurgency advice? Did his political masters give him state-level intel? It's speculation, but consider this. How does a man from the ghetto outmaneuver both the Jamaican police and a foreign-funded rival gang? He wasn't lucky. He was trained. The calm before the breakdown. By 1990, something had shifted. Dido had grown quieter, less visible. Some said he wanted out. Others believed he was grooming a successor. But then came a triple murder in Tivoli, that broken, uneasy ceasefire. Dido's name was all over the intelligence wires. Kingston was bracing for something big, and it came. In 1991, during what should have been a peaceful community concert in Arnett Gardens, gunfire erupted. It was a setup. Dido's convoy was hit. Three of his lieutenants died on the spot. Dido escaped, but barely. This was no longer politics. It was personal, and the retaliation would redefine the city. Chapter 2, Blood for Votes. The failed hit at the Arnett Gardens concert in 1991 marked a turning point in Kingston's underground war. For years, Dido had maneuvered like a chess master, reactive, strategic, and eerily calm. But now, he was angry. And an angry Dido was dangerous, not just to his enemies, but to the fragile power balance he had once carefully maintained, the death squads. What came next wasn't warfare, it was extermination. Dido activated a shadow unit that operated under the radar of both his lieutenants and the police. Recruited from Spanish Town, St. Catherine, and Denham Town, these men had no political loyalties. They weren't jungle youth, they were mercenaries, paid in cash and cocaine. For the next 6 months, Tivoli allies began disappearing in ones and twos. Gunmen were found with their tongues cut out. JLP-aligned community leaders were executed in front of their families. Dido didn't just retaliate, he humiliated. The police knew what was happening, but few dared intervene. After all, who could be trusted? Some officers themselves were rumored to be on Dido's payroll, or worse, under political pressure to let the war play out. By mid-1992, Kingston was paralyzed. Politics in the back rooms. Behind the bloodshed, politicians met in silence. A PNP minister allegedly confronted Dido in a private meeting, urging him to tone it down for the upcoming election year. Dido's response, according to an anonymous source, votes need to be protected. You want power? Let me do my job. It wasn't arrogance. It was leverage. The PNP's majority in South Kingston rested heavily on jungle and surrounding blocks, and Dido controlled every street, every alley, every vote. If he pulled back, the turf would splinter, and if it splintered, Tivoli would swallow it whole. So the killings continued. The massacre in Wilton Gardens on October 7, 1992, six men were gunned down near Wilton Gardens, just across the invisible border that separated PNP and JLP territories. They were young, unarmed, and reportedly returning from football training. Within hours, Tivoli residents claimed the hit was ordered by Dido. Community protests erupted. The police commissioner was forced to make a statement, but Dido stayed quiet. No threats, no denials, just silence. And everyone knew what that meant. When asked off the record if the men were affiliated, a jungle elder said simply, "Them cross line, them nafi cross." The beginning of the end. Powerful as he was, Dido had made one critical mistake, believing his enemies were still afraid. They weren't. In Tivoli, Jim Brown's empire was entering its own transformation. New blood, more ruthless and politically ambitious, wanted jungle off the map, and they had the tools to do it. Firearms smuggled from Miami, connections to Colombian traffickers, inside men in the police. According to a classified 1993 report, a meeting was held between rival factions aligned with Tivoli and disgruntled former members of Dido's own crew. The message was simple. It's time. What Dido didn't know was that the war he'd started had become bigger than him. He was now a symbol, and symbols make easy targets. The mole he came from within. His name was never publicly released, but insiders called him Bug. A former lieutenant of Dido's, Bug had grown resentful after being sidelined from cocaine profits. Worse, Dido had allegedly humiliated him during a strategy meeting, calling him a coward with a gun. Bug defected, but he didn't just flee. He carried maps, schedules, and habits. He knew where Dido liked to eat, where his woman lived, and where his lieutenants rotated their hideouts. Bug's betrayal would seal Dido's fate. The hit March 3, 1994. It was supposed to be a normal night. Dido had just attended a funeral in Trenchtown. His convoy was small, 3 cars, 6 men total. They were returning to a known safe house along Lincoln Avenue. What they didn't know was that Bug had planted a signal, a tiny red flag tied to a light post, barely visible in the dark. It was confirmation. Dido was inbound. Around 9:37 p.m., as the lead vehicle turned onto the lane, gunfire erupted from both sides. It was an ambush, not just a drive-by. This was tactical. Gunmen used sandbags, oil drums, and rooftop vantage points. Dido's vehicle was hit with over 50 rounds in 20 seconds. The shootout lasted 7 minutes. 2 of his men died instantly. 3 more were injured. Dido tried to escape on foot but was hit in the chest and legs. He collapsed in an alley near the community center. By the time police arrived, the gunmen were gone, and so was Dido. Dead. At age 33. The aftermath. The news sent shockwaves through Kingston. Jungle went quiet, not from grief, but from confusion. Who would take over? Would Tivoli strike again? Would the police now flood the community? They did, but it was too late. Jungle had no clear leader. The lieutenants were divided. Paranoia surged. Retaliation was expected, but none came. And that's when the real collapse began. The splintering. With Dido gone, his empire shattered into fragments. Micro gangs emerged. Showa crew, fatherless posse, bad breed. Each controlled a few blocks. Each tried to claim Dido's legacy. None succeeded. What Dido had built on fear and loyalty was now being auctioned off to the highest bidder, often drug traffickers or rival dons looking to expand. Ironically, the very political machine Dido had helped fortify now found itself without a reliable enforcer. Elections became more volatile, voter turnout dropped, and Jungle, once a symbol of PNP discipline, became a war zone. By 1995, at least five former Dido associates had been killed by rivals or each other. His empire had lasted a decade. His collapse took just 10 months. Police denials, political silence. Despite multiple investigations, no one was ever charged with Dido's murder. The police called it gang-on-gang violence. The politicians offered condolences, but no inquiries. Behind closed doors, they were relieved. Dido had become too big, too unpredictable. His death allowed the state to reset the board, even if it meant more blood would spill first. Legacy of a warlord. Dido was never photographed by the media. No known recordings of his voice exist. No interviews, no letters, just stories, told in hushed tones, passed down from elders to youth. In Arnett Gardens, older residents still refer to the 1980s as Dido time. For some, it was protection. For others, it was tyranny. But all agree on one thing. Dido was a force no one could ignore. He wasn't a gangster in the American sense. He was something far more dangerous. A political weapon with no off switch. The echoes today, the shadow Dido left still haunts Jungle. Gang violence remains. Political manipulation continues. Young men still pick up guns, not for glory, but for survival. And though Dido is gone, his blueprint endures. Every don that rises in Kingston carries a piece of him, his ruthlessness, his strategy, his understanding that in Jamaica, power doesn't come from ballots. It comes from the barrel of a gun and the silence that follows.